From the land of Grand Teton of our city in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 6th day of April, 2017. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later in the program, Matt Bennett will join us from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. And then we'll wrap up our time together by taking a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Mike Tenura, T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Update you on the ag news for the day, tell you to join Team WILL, and give you a quick look at what's coming up on Commodity Week. Our panelists this week will include John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures. We'll record that at 3 o'clock this afternoon, post it to the website at willag.org by about 5 this evening.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, this is the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's the 6th day of April. We're now joined, as usual for a Thursday, by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
How you doing, Todd?
Well, I'm fine, but it's a little cloudy and cold here. How's the weather where you are?
It's hot and dry. However, we have cooled down a little bit. We've been down here in the Rio Grande Valley for the last couple of weeks, and we've been running 90 plus degrees, but now it's cooled off now to the mid 80s. Corn is knee high down here, so it's looking good for this time of year anyway. But the rain in Texas has been mostly up in the northern and eastern half of Texas, more so than anything in the southern parts of Texas.
Now, there was a time you spent in Louisiana with Zinno for a few years on the export facilities there. You mentioned that you've got corn knee-high in Texas, and I made note that there is some concern that planting progress went so quickly in the Delta and the South that it may run into some export potential problems up against South American corn during midsummer. Do you think that will be really a problem from your experience?
Well, it could be. To my understanding, the guys that I talk to that are working the export market tell me that a lot of the end users or exporters are pretty well covered through May or into June. And right at the moment, they're really not in any appetite to extend that coverage. I think they're kind of waiting to see how the planting season goes, but it's going to have to probably take some kind of weather adversity to get them to move off the bench and start extending that coverage. But for right now, they've got their coverage, at least in the United States, pretty well satisfied. And, of course, now the South American inventories are really beginning to accelerate and move into the world marketplace. So that is probably one of the more bearish influences that you could probably think of at the moment. Besides, this is the time of year that the trade focuses on supply. We just finished up with a grain stocks report and planted acreage report here a week ago, and now everybody's starting to focus in on next week's supply-demand numbers. And for the most part, it's going to be old news because the March 31st report with the grain stocks numbers, both corn and soybeans, coming in higher than the average trade guessed, has most people thinking that we're going to see some higher carryover numbers for the current crop year. And then I don't think USDA will come out with any 17 numbers yet. I think they wait till May until they do that. Unless I've missed something, they wait till May to do that, and they'll use the planted acres numbers that they got out of the March report and then multiply it by a trend line yield, or they'll evaluate the planting progress up through May 1st, I suppose, and kind of determine what kind of yield they want to use. But there'll probably be a trend line, and then they'll decide whether or not they want to go above it or below it. So I think, you know, as long as the market is focused on supply, and the grain stocks report did show that we do have adequate supplies of both old crop corn and soybeans. Farmers still own probably too much old crop corn. Now, I know it's cold and wet up there, but I've had several farmers tell me that they're not doing nothing. It's cold and wet and cold and wet. And I said, well, I understand your concern, but the market doesn't really worry about planting delays until you kind of get in about May 15th. If you get into May 15th and you only have 25% of the corn crop planted, then it will worry about it. The earliest that I've really seen markets worry about delayed plantings or anything would be sometime around May 1st, and that's when we have a relatively tight supply-demand balance sheet. Given that we don't have a real tight balance sheet, it may be difficult to get the market to respond on delayed plantings, or at least for right now anyway. I don't think that really becomes much of a factor until you get closer to May 1st, Todd.
When you look at the WASDE, or the World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimate, that's due out next week for corn, how much of a change do you think there might be? And what difference does it really make? Because we're now at 2.32 billion bushels. University of Illinois has done some calculation. I think they're thinking now 2.395 billion for the April WASDE, but a smaller crop, given the acreage that is likely to put into the ground, according to the acreage report, or prospective plantings report released last week, is coming on, and that will begin to draw down stocks. So how important is the April number, and will it show a bigger number, do you think?
My guess would be that it would show a little bigger carryout number for the current crop year, simply because we're halfway through the crop year, and the stocks number came out above trade expectations. So that is indicating one of two things. Feed and residual use is not going as fast as what USDA had anticipated earlier in the growing season, and or the crop is overstated and it's just not penciled in on the production number yet. And on corn's case, they never hardly ever changed the production. They just pulled everything into the residual, which is unexplained disappearance or unexplained not usage. And now soybeans could also be the same thing. Since the numbers were a little bit on the high side, you might see a minor uptick. But everything's within the margin of error, so I really don't see anything shocking. As like I said, is the April supply demand tables are usually viewed as old news because we've already seen the March 1 numbers. So everybody kind of prices in what they expect. And like you said, the numbers are large enough that a 50 million bushel increase here or a 25 million bushel increase over there is really not much of a factor at this point in the marketing season, given the supply on hand that we have.
All right. Thanks so much. We look forward to having you on Commodity Week this afternoon. We'll let you take us through the technicals, and we'll be joined by Chuck Shelby and John Bondurant for that event, too. So I'll talk to you about 3 o'clock today.
Very well, Todd.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker, Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. He will be one of the panelists on our Commodity Week program. We'll post that to the website at willag.org by about 5 o'clock this evening. The other two on with us today, John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures out of Memphis, Tennessee, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana. Again, Commodity Week, our weekly look at what's been happening in agriculture, recorded at 3 o'clock and then posted to the web. By about 5, you'll hear it here tomorrow on our home radio station, many of these other radio stations over the weekend. But you can hear it early if you'd like. One of the other things you can do while you're on our website at willag.org is see the University of Illinois' expectations, not only for the April projections of the World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimates next week, and I can tell you they're at 2.395 billion for corn. That's up from the 2.320 that is currently USDA's number out of March. And they leave the soybean ending stocks at 4.35. You can see all of those numbers, and their May or new crop numbers are there as well. And you can listen to Daryl Good, Scott Irwin, and Todd Hubbs talk about the implications going forward of the USDA grain stocks and the prospective plantings report at willag.org. In today's agricultural news, pork producers have fanned out across the nation's capital today in hopes of securing $150 million in funding to be included in the next farm bill to maintain a ready-to-go supply of vaccine for foot and mouth disease. Jason Probst is the president of the Illinois Pork Producers Association and says there's a good reason why.
The reason we look at that is based on the amount of product that we move, whether it's pork, beef, poultry, whatever it is, we export approximately 25% of our products or more worldwide. If we lose those markets because of a foot and mouth outbreak, 25% of our market goes away. All that product has to be consumed locally or destroyed or go away. So when we lose that, we lose a big portion of our corn and grain markets out there and how that affects everybody. And so that's the thing, you know, it kind of gets overlooked. Everybody talks about exports, ethanol markets. What's our big drivers of end users of corn and beans? It's livestock.
Jason Probst is the president of the Illinois Pork Producers Association. He made his comments during the all-day agricultural outlook on the 7th day of March. Pork producers are today fanning out across Washington, D.C., in hopes of securing $150 million annually for foot and mouth disease vaccine. USDA already maintains a small amount of FMD vaccine concentrate at the facility on Plum Island, New York, that, in an outbreak scenario, could be sent to manufacturers in England or France, a process that could take weeks. The pork industry instead wants millions of doses already made and ready to ship. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., where ag leaders and tax experts are both calling for a simpler, fairer, less burdensome tax code. To the American Farm Bureau Federation tax advisors Pat Wolf, that means producers need tax management tools to weather the economic storm. Wolf tells the House ag leaders that congressional tax writers, considering changes to cash accounting, interest deductions, and other tax breaks, need to be careful how they structure the first major tax overhaul since 1986.
Unless farmers and ranchers continue to have access to a menu of tax provisions that help them deal with the cyclical and unpredictable nature of their businesses, there is a potential that even with lower tax rates, there could be an increase in taxes that farmers and ranchers pay.
Among the AFBF tax priorities, same-year expensing of equipment cost, cash accounting, lower capital gains taxes, continued use of the like-kind exchanges to defer taxes on assets being replaced, and ending the estate tax that Wolf calls a cloud over farming. AFBF and ag tax experts are not taking a position yet on a 20% border adjustment tax that Wolf says has both pros and cons.
The provision is designed to make our products more competitive in foreign markets. That's a huge positive for agriculture because we export so much, 25% of our products. On the flip side, we also rely on imported supplies, fertilizer, fuel, and that those items would increase in price, at least initially.
AFBF's Pat Wolf and others testifying say they'd have to see how it's structured before they can tell if a border tax would be a net plus for agriculture. Let's stay in Washington, D.C., where the latest USDA update shows U.S. agricultural exports slowing down recently, but still well ahead of this time a year ago. Gary Crawford has more.
For the last 3 months for which we have complete trade numbers, the U.S. has seen monthly declines in the value of agricultural exports, but
the declines that have happened, I wouldn't say are necessarily out of line with what traditionally takes place based on the seasonal output.
Agriculture Department trade economist Bryce Cook, winter is usually the time when ag shipments cool off a little bit. And besides, for the first 5 months of the fiscal year, October through February, total exports are just over $65 billion, 14% above the same time frame last year. Cook says a lot of that being driven by bulk commodities, those sales up 27%. Soybean values are up
23%. Corn 60% in value terms, wheat 23%, and cotton 108%.
Volumes also up. The USDA's latest forecast for the fiscal year is for $136 billion, so we've got 7 months to sell $71 billion more to get to that point, or an average of about $9 billion a month. So far, we're averaging $13 billion a month. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
And finally today, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has placed a time for debate and a vote for the confirmation of Agriculture Secretary nominee Sonny Perdue. The vote is scheduled for 5:30 Eastern, April the 24th, after what's expected to be a couple of hours of debate. The Senate Periodical Gallery confirmed the vote, saying McConnell added it to the schedule as a unanimous consent request. The schedule puts to rest any speculation a vote could be held yet this week. And that's a look at the day's agricultural news. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. We're now joined by Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Hey, Matt, thanks for being with us. I'd like you to take me through last Friday's prospective plantings report. The acreage numbers were, I think, I don't know about whether they were in line with what you were thinking. If I remember your numbers correctly, probably so. And certainly you were seeing some of those numbers come up big time out west.
Yeah, you know, whenever I saw the soybean number, I was not surprised whatsoever that, you know, I think the one thing that I've been saying all along this winter, you know, is that I just haven't seen or heard folks talk about having the incentive to plant as much corn on corn, especially in non-livestock areas, is what we've seen in the last several years. And so it's not necessarily that producers were going to plant beans on beans, but just they were going more to a traditional rotation, which with 94 million acres of corn last year, that would suggest a lot of beans this year. So that 89.5 area on beans didn't surprise me. And I've been also saying all along I thought corn and beans would be within a million acres of each other, because I just felt like the bean acreage would be quite robust as compared to what we've seen in the last few years.
And as it turns out, they're 500,000 apart, 89.5 for the soybeans, 90 million for the corn. Does this change your marketing plan for either of those commodities?
Well, I think, you know, with soybeans, as you know, we were extremely aggressive. We really don't have anything to do. If someone called me, it's something that we'd have to tackle based upon their farm and see where their break-even prices are. Corn, I feel like we've got some support under us for the time being. If we truly only plant 90 or less, I do think there's going to be a fair amount of pressure on the weather, you know, to actually come up with decent production this year, because we really could cut into that carryout given the demand that we've gotten used to.
What else have you been talking with producers about this week?
Well, I mean, obviously the weather. Everyone's talking about the weather. You know, producers are wondering, why is the corn market not rallying if we may be pushing planting back a little bit. But as you know, we can put this crop in the ground so quickly that it's awfully early to be getting too concerned about that. But for the most part, producers are just trying to figure out, you know, at what point do they step in and sell some of this corn? Because, you know, we did see a nice little rally back to some levels that we were frustrated we didn't take advantage of earlier. But, you know, back down here at 385 is not quite as attractive as where we were at whenever we were pushing in the low 390s.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us for the afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined by Mike Tenorum. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. We've had quite a little bit of rainfall in our part of the world. Can you tell me what it looks like across the whole of the growing region?
Pretty much the same pattern is going to continue. We've seen a lot of rain in a lot of different areas over the last couple of weeks, and we're going to continue to see a number of significant rain events over the next 2 weeks. Now, there will be a little bit of a break here with no rain once we get rid of the showers in the eastern Corn Belt today. It'll stay dry tomorrow. It will be dry on Saturday. But then rain starts to show back up in the northern plains come Sunday and Monday. Then we see a few thunderstorms in the Corn Belt Monday and Tuesday. And then we see a few more thunderstorms in different areas of the plains and Corn Belt Wednesday and Thursday. So quite a bit of rain over the next week, but it'll be a little more scattered, still generally around 1/2 inch to 1.5 inches in any given location.
Is this atypical of spring in the United States or more typical?
Well, the weather that we have coming up over the next week is fairly typical, where you see a thunderstorm cluster here and there. It dries out, it rains. Not everybody gets hit all at the same time. But the reason that it is a little bit atypical is that we're just in a real wet pattern here over the last 2-3 weeks. We see this normal pattern over the next week, but then after that, there's a number of signals that suggest that starting up next weekend and into the following week, we'll get back into that wet pattern. So if you put all of this together and you look at it from the perspective of the last 4 to 5 weeks, then you start to come to the conclusion that we're in a wet pattern, we're staying wet. This will continue through the middle, maybe even into the last third of April. And then you start saying to yourself, well, when is this going to end? Of course, at some point it will end, but we just don't see that ending in the near term.
Speaking of wet, things in South America, Argentina in particular, have been a little on the wet side, and we've heard some about that as it relates to their harvest. What can you tell me?
Well, they've seen a lot of rain in the far western growing areas of Argentina over the last couple of weeks. A couple of areas even reported more than 10 inches of rain, so that's a lot of rain. As we go forward, the concern that we have is that there will be a lot more rain Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Now, it won't rain in all of Argentina over that entire period, but there will be a number of rain chances throughout that window, and that's simply because a very large upper-level system moves over Argentina. It swirls for a couple of days, and then it exits. So once this system exits, it turns a lot drier starting on Tuesday and then continuing for another 7 to 10 days after that. We just need to get through this first rain event coming up this weekend and early next week, and then after that, things start to dry out and also turn a lot cooler. So wetness will not be a big issue in Argentina once we're talking a week from today.
And in Brazil?
Brazil will turn a little bit drier as we go forward. Remember that they have a distinct dry season and a distinct wet season. The dry season typically begins in earnest in about 4 to 6 weeks, and we'll see the first flash of that coming up next week. Now, it's been wet in most of Brazil over the last several weeks and several months, so second crop corn is pretty much in good shape, we would have to guess, especially as you move north into the concentrated regions. So even though it's drying out, we just don't see a lot of reason to be concerned about it right now.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
You're welcome, Todd.
And of course, Mike Tenura, he's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason.